It's October, baby. That's so exciting. It's so exciting because for those of you listening in, it's likely that you're a para person, a lot like myself, someone who loves fall. I love the sound of the leaves scraping across the concrete. I love the brisk air. For God's sakes, I moved from Kansas City to Minnesota because I love the cold weather. I love the scarves and the hats and the gloves and the hot coffee and the steam and my breath. I love this time of year. No, I'm not a pumpkin spice person. I keep it pretty plain, but I do love the pumpkins and I love the Halloween and I love the fact that I can be myself and it's a little less taboo. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Maybe you're somebody who's a little into witchcraft, Wiccan, pagan, supernatural, spiritual, and not just supernatural, the show, but supernatural things, storytelling, folk tales, superstitions. You love to celebrate the lunar eclipse that we just had, and you find yourself being someone who's really tied to nature, tied to spiritualism, tied to the afterlife, and you are excited about this time of year. This is the time of year that people can tell ghost stories and can huddle around a campfire and cuddle in tight, and you can be scared. And it's okay. And you can explain to your friends and family that might be otherwise normal and describe some of your scary encounters from the paranormal realm. You can go out on a ghost tour or a ghost hunt or a paranormal investigation or a haunted house and have a scary experience and talk about it, be excited about it, and that's okay. We can put blood on our windows. We can be a little Dexter and nobody knows the difference. So, if you are excited, like I am, for October, then you're especially going to be excited for today's show. Today's show is kind of an introduction to October, is an introduction into the Halloween, the fall, the autumn type air. I'm going to talk a little bit about some really exciting news in my realm, but also we're going to be bringing on a guest of mine, a very good friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, my sister, for gosh sakes, literally. And we're going to talk a little bit about divination. We're going to talk about divination, spells, spirit work. We're going to talk about what it is to be psychic and psychic readings and what to expect for those of you in the Midwest who are going to be journeying out to see me in person at the Psychic Fair. It's the 40th, I believe, the 40th annual Psychic Fair in Kansas City. It's one of the biggest metaphysical fairs in the country. It's an annual, used to be biannual. It's an annual show, and it's this huge space. It's not like the paranormal conferences you might be used to, or even like the Paradigm Symposium, which we've rescheduled for May. But it is something that it doesn't just have workshops. It doesn't just have lectures. It doesn't just have cool vendors, but it has a whole plethora of psychic metaphysical people that come together and they do readings for charity, for donations. They do readings at discounted rates, and you can have Reiki work, and you can have aura photography, and you can have angel readings and spirit guides sessions, and I mean anything and everything metaphysical. If you're at all curious, I would encourage you to come out because you're not paying hundreds. You're not even paying a five or a 10. I think it's $8 after the coupon that my sister and I have provided on social networking sites for you to get in, walk around, and that's for all 3 days, baby. So it's a really, really, really good value. And there's some really amazing people there. And I have to tell you, my sister and I started going here in the early, early 90s. It was something that our mom was a psychic reader at this event, and one of my godmothers and god-grandmothers, my nanny's mother, was one of the founding women of the PRS in Kansas City. And so it's kind of cool to be a third-generation reader for PRS. PRS, the psychical, however you prefer to pronounce it, Research Society of Kansas City, they are a nonprofit organization that does lectures, workshops, learning centers, and reaches out to people who are experiencing hauntings or strange phenomena that need help. And they've been around, like I said, for almost 40 years now. And that's where I got started. A young 10-year-old Sarah Looking to do more than just trespass on the old Odd Fellows Cemetery or down in the Fairfax District at the old General Mills plant. I was looking to do something a little bit more professional, and so PRS kind of adopted me, and it was really exciting to learn from the wonderful people they have there who are a part of that association. I've been recently on the PRS radio station myself as a guest, talking about some of my experiences, but also talking about dun dun dun. Crank your listening ears up a few notches about the release of my new book. That's right, I'm a published author. It feels good to say that, and it's been a long time coming. My guest that I'm bringing on today, Kat Wilder, she is a writer herself. Growing up as my mentor, my older sister, she was always, you know, eyebrow deep in a book, usually a Terry Brooks book or a fantasy novel of some kind. And she encouraged me to be a writer. And I remember in third and fourth and fifth grade writing these books and handing them into my teachers and them kind of just grading the first page of like 12 and never reading beyond that. Only one teacher, Ms. Lucas, in fourth grade encouraged me to follow that dream. And it was exciting for me to send her a copy of my book just this week and tell her thank you for that encouragement. It's taken me 3 decades to do it, but it's my first published book that is a little raw and a little exposed, and it's an easy, quick read. It's not a huge novel, but it is a compilation of short stories, some of my own experiences in the paranormal. And it is a little dark, a little creepy, a little scary, a little spooky, and it's fun. And for all those people who've joined me on paranormal investigations around the world, from Catacombs of France to the London Tower to Dachau in Germany to all the many places that are well known here in our own country, from Waverly to the Queen Mary to the Stanley Hotel even, I give a little insight into what encouraged me to delve deep into the paranormal, and I share some of my most personal stories with the reader. And so if you are interested in a good read for the campfire, maybe something that you'd even like to cuddle around with someone, a nice, you know, brisk night on the porch there watching the leaves fall and the moon rise, you can pull out this book. It's called Haunted by the Abyss. You can find it at Barnes and Nobles across the country. You can order it online at Amazon, or you can go straight to the publisher, Llewellyn Publishing, who's doing a pre-release right now. It releases on the 5th, but you can pre-order it today. I'm really excited about it. It's only $16, and it's a great value. It's a good read. It's very important to me. I would hope that you would pick up a copy. And also send me a review. Let me know if you love it, like it, or if you're like, Sarah, hey man, maybe you shouldn't be a writer. I appreciate constructive criticism, but please be gentle. So what we're going to do, guys, for those of you listening here on Intrepid Radio, or maybe your TuneIn app that's just from your mobile device, whatever you're doing to listen in, I encourage you to stay with us. We're going to take a quick break and come back to you with a guest live here on Mysteries of the Mind as we delve into divination and what it is to be psychic.
Thank you.
Intrepid Radio. Hopefully you went potty, you grabbed some popcorn, you called all your friends and you said, get in there right now to Intrepid Radio. Grab your mobile device and go to TuneIn. Do the app right now. It's free. Click it and listen. We're talking about scary things here on Mysteries of the Mind. And we have our guest, Kat Wilder. Are you with us, Kat?
I'm with you. She's
from the great beyond. Now, we do sound a lot of like, I think I'm getting more Minnesotan, so hopefully you can tell a little difference. But we did used to sound exactly the same. And it's not your hearing, people. We are sisters. This is my, you couldn't tell, but my older sister. And she's been a mentor to me in the paranormal realm. And her and I have been on adventures, countless adventures together. And so I'm going to be addressing just questions that people have sent in from the social networking sites, asking about what it is to be psychic, what it's like to be psychic, what are some of our scariest adventures, but then also kind of encouraging people to be prepared and ready to come see us live at the PRS Psychic Fair on the weekend of October 17th. Yeah, the 16th, the 17th, and the 18th. We're going to be there Friday night, all day Saturday, and Sunday morning. And so we're going to be there doing readings together. When we do readings together, we used to call it Minds in Tandem, which I still kind of refer to it as that. But it's really fun because for me, being psychic means that I get visual and auditory messages. Sometimes it's from people who've passed over. Sometimes it's just from that person's energy, memories, traumas, predictions, worries, fears. It tends to have a little bit of a negative connotation, which is why I went into forensics. But for you, you get a little bit different of a message and you receive it differently, which is what makes our readings together so cool, is it's kind of this well-rounded whole experience. But could you kind of briefly, Kat, let people know who are listening what information you get, what kinds of information you get, and the best way to get that information? Should they be bringing an item from a loved one? Is it, what is it like to get a reading from Kat Wilder?
Well, I definitely receive my messages in a certain way. I'm a very kinesthetic and empathic psychic, which means that when I'm trying to do a reading for a person, an object, an event, whatever it is that the client is asking about, my body is put into the place of the person that I'm reading for. So if I'm reading for somebody that's sick and they're getting ready to go to the hospital or something like that, I feel sick where they're sick. If they've just gone through an emotional trauma, I feel that trauma. So I kind of experience what they experience. Certainly they can bring an object. They don't need to. I've gotten pretty comfortable just reading people's energies and getting the answers that they need for things. But if it's going to be about a specific person attached to an object, then they might want to bring that object with them, or a picture, something like that. Definitely I get a feeling. I experience what that energy experienced. It's the same whenever we do our paranormal investigations. I experience what the traumatic event, how it affected the people involved. I feel what the people involved felt. I go through their experiences, and that's how I'm able to describe what happened. I don't see them. I don't necessarily hear them, although I can form visual images from what I'm feeling, just like a blind person can form a visual image from touching objects and feeling their surroundings the same exact way. It's mostly kinesthetic.
Kinesthetic meaning touching, feeling, emotions.
Right, exactly.
Now, I have to, just to give people an example, because this is one of the readings I remember from our most recent Minds in Tandem experience, and I hope she's listening. I'm sure she is. I won't put her name out there. Her initial is M, if she is listening. I'm sure she's listening. But I remember this wonderful woman who's kind of become a good friend of ours now and a returning client. She comes to the psychic fair kind of unsure of what to expect. She's not necessarily a metaphysical person. She was actually a military woman and a very rational, logical woman, but she had recently lost her husband, her soulmate. She was really, really missing him. And she was hoping that she would maybe see a psychic, make a connection, and just get some proof, because she wasn't a very religious or spiritual woman, that he was indeed with her, that he was okay. And I think a lot of us can empathize with that as we grieve someone that we love. And she looked around because, of course, you come to the PRS fair and you're going to see at least 20 to 30 to maybe even 50 psychics, depending on the day. It's kind of cool. It's like coming to the pound. You walk around, you get to judge and walk past these booths and you're like, yes, no, that person's strange. That person's, you know, and my sister and I love to do this, which is why we leave Friday morning open, because we like to get, you know, familiar with our surroundings. But you just kind of find the psychic that you have a connection with. And so this woman, she kind of walked past our booth a few times and she put her name on the list and she waited her turn and then she comes and she sits down. And immediately you and I get information. So we kind of look at each other and say, okay, well, who wants to go first? And I believe you went first and said, okay, well, you're here to touch base with someone that you've lost. And I'm feeling that this is a male, that this is a loved one. This is somebody you had a really strong connection with. And do you remember what you described to her? Do you remember what reading I'm talking about?
I know the reading you're talking about. Gosh, there was so much we went over.
It was so important to her because you kinesthetically experienced his passing. So if you could just kind of give us a brief narrative of what that was like.
So now I'm wondering if I'm getting two readings mixed up.
Well, this was the one who had, he'd been bedridden. He was a marathon runner. And
okay, that's what I thought. You know, honestly, I hate to say this, but I don't remember enormous detail of the reading, but I do remember that particular sequence. And I remember that it wasn't, I know she did really worry about it being really painful and it being a really scary thing, and it wasn't, and he knew it was going to happen. And I remember that. I remember that there was a knowledge that it was going to happen and that he went and ran that day anyway. And I remember the thoughts that had kind of gone through his head that morning about that he didn't really want her to see it and that kind of thing. And, that it wasn't a painful passing. It was pretty quick. And that was something that I remember her being really curious about because she, you know, if I remember right, she got there like right after or right as it was happening or something like that. And she was really worried because she felt like she wished she could have stopped it. She wished she could have been there quicker or that kind of thing. But it would have happened exactly as it was going to happen anyway.
Well, and I remember you saying there was something with his breath, there's something with his lungs. I'm struggling to breathe. It's very hard to breathe. And she began to tear up. And she knew you were making this connection. And we started to talk. She had questions, like you said, about the passing and about if it was painful. And we kind of went over all that. And then she said, well, is there anything that's unresolved? You know, are you getting anything now? And I had interjected. I said, well, there's something that comes through quite clear to me. Something that is supposed to be given to his son.
Yeah, the guitar.
Yeah. And I said, there is a guitar. And I said, it's kind of strange because anyone who plays a guitar usually doesn't do this, but they left the pick in the upper strings up in the top. And she, again, she starts tearing up. She knows exactly what guitar we're talking about. She said, yes, yes, yes. And I said, this needs to go to his son. And of course, his son was estranged from him. It was from a previous marriage, and that woman wasn't necessarily giving any custodial visitations to him, but he was really longing for his dad and was sad that his dad had passed away so early because it was he was very young. He was in his 40s. And I just remember that reading most recently because it was so touching. It provided such closure. And for you to be able to touch base kinesthetically and to experience that passing and give some of those details, and then for me to chime in with some of the messages that he had, things that he wanted to finish up with, and just to, you know, say, hey, man. And he was very funny. I remember him being very crude and funny and crass and kind of interjecting some of his narrative. And she was laughing. You know, by the end of the reading, she was laughing. And she said, I couldn't have imagined a better experience. And I miss him so much. But now I know that his spirit isn't just gone, that there's something, that there's something. And that's what the psychic experience can be. And for those of you listening, if you've never had a psychic reading, at the PRS fair, it's really fun. We don't usually utilize any of our tools, but I did have a question from Facebook from an Eric T, who was chiming in about how do you use a divination tool? He's been trying to use pendulums. He's not quite sure if it's his unconscious or him making something up or his imagination. How do you know? And so I'm interested in your reaction because you utilize divination as well as I, but we use different tools. And so I'm interested in how you know what is a message or spiritual guidance versus imagination or, you know, crap, psychoanalysis crap.
This is a common question, and you probably hear this a lot too. For me, it's a matter of trusting yourself. It's not really a matter of is it real or not real. If you trust yourself, it's real. You just have to not question it, and you have to go with the first thing that comes to mind, even if it doesn't make any sense to you. And if you're using pendulums and dowsing rods and things like that, that's a good way to start because you're getting a yes and no answer, and that's really straightforward. I mean, you know, with my pendulum, clockwise is yes, counterclockwise is no, diagonal is maybe, or it's pointing to something that I'm asking for a location on. So it's straightforward. There's no ambiguity with that. So sometimes those kind of tools are a really good way to start. And once you really hone those tools, then move on to something a little bit more ambiguous, like using cards, tarot cards, runes, bones, sticks, pennies, whatever you want. If you're in Kansas City, I know that they're having a class on throwing objects for divination here later this month.
Here, take this frying pan. Fling.
Yeah, it's called casting. And, of course, I know Sarah's familiar with it because gypsies, they cast beams, they cast stones. They used to collect coins and baubles and things, beads, buttons, whatever, and they would cast them on the mat. And the mat had markings on it that meant certain things, and how the object landed on the mat meant something, and which way the object landed meant something, and which way it faced meant something. And basically, you just set your own set of rules. This means this. And if it lands this way, it means this. Or, you know, it's this color, it means this. And if it lands on the floor, it means this. And then you just start doing it. And then don't ever say, well, I didn't really think it was supposed to land on the floor for that one. Just go with it. And keep going until your messages will just come through more and more clear and more quickly, and you'll be a lot more confident.
I love that. I love that because you're exactly right with, I know for, in my own example, for example, with my bone runes, I make custom bone rune sets for people, and I use a bone rune set for myself that I made. And much like you described, you know, with our ancestry, we have some Cherokee Indian in us and we have some Sinti Gypsy in us. And we've kind of really identified with the Gypsy culture more so. And this idea that divination tools should be an extension of yourself. They should be something that you create, you make, and that it's not up for you to interpret so much as it is for you to trust. So in my bone runes, it was kind of fun the very first time I took them to a conference and laid them out. Because, of course, there's something when people see bones laid out on the table. It's a little, it can be intimidating. But one man, he kept coming and perusing. And he would walk by and he would hover and he'd walk by and he'd hover. And I kept trying to make eye contact with him and he wouldn't really look at me. And he finally comes by and says, I just am wondering why you have the writing that you have on here. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, some of those markings are Nordic and I specialize in Nordic hieroglyphs. And I'm just wondering. And I didn't necessarily know that at all. I hadn't looked at Nordic hieroglyphs or anything like that. And I don't identify with that culture. But when I was creating the bones and making my own symbols and signs, apparently a lot of them look like very Nordic type alphabet symbols, which was kind of cool because he sat down and gave me his interpretation of the bones. And so if I casted something for him, it was likely that he was going to interpret it completely different than I would have. So it was just kind of neat to see, you know, how you can make a divination tool yourself. And as far as Eric goes with the pendulums, they can swing one way, this way, or that. You can make the chart on the bottom. You can make it yourself. Some people always say, well, how come some charts say yes and no, and other charts have all of these things on them and writings, and which one's right? And I don't know about you, Kat, but that question is so difficult, the which one is right. Right and wrong, at least for me, that does not exist.
That does not compute.
Right. It's like an error, 404, and it's absolutely true. It just does not make any sense, because there is no right and wrong. That's not how it works. It's just what is, and
Yeah.
I like that about spirituality and the metaphysical. And so, Eric, I hope what it is mostly is it could be your imagination. It could be something that you've repressed or something. But there is no right and wrong. Whatever comes to you, whatever surfaces, whatever you get, go with it, trust it, and go from there. Another question from Holiday. Her name is Holiday. Holiday has wanted to know, what is the scariest experience that you have had, Kat, doing paranormal investigations?
What is the scariest? I'd still say it was that day you and I went out on I won't say what highway and went to that little cemetery that everybody always says, oh, the pet cemetery. No, this was a person cemetery. And I didn't want to get out of the car.
I remember this. I remember this. Okay, so for those of you listening, this is, I actually talk about this in my book. This is one of my chapters. It was in the area of and about Tiffany Springs, and which is a huge area, but it's kind of well known for being an area that is very haunted. It's a haunted land. It's associated with the Trail of Tears and reservation people moving from one place to the next and being pushed about and whatnot, as well as fur trades, the Civil War, the border war, you name it. It's just kind of a it's an interesting place right there in Kansas City, because you're right off of the port in Parkville from the river, and of course you're right there between the train tracks and the major highways, and it was one of those Lewis and Clark points for meeting and transport. So a lot of things happened there, just by circumstance. And this place is known to be haunted. Ooh, so of course Kat and I are like, all right, well, we can deal with that. We'll go and check it out. And we drove up to this location and started to see strange lights and immediately get that feeling that, like, you shouldn't get out of the car. Like that intuitive feeling you get when you're walking in a dark parking garage back to your vehicle and you feel like someone's going to come out and get you. Just a very uncomfortable feeling. And I remember looking at Kat and saying, well, what do you want to do? We drove all the way out here. What do you think?
Well,
And
no, you were about to open the door and go look at something, and I was like, no, close the door, close the door, close
right. And it was so bizarre because my car wasn't working very well, which this is not the first time that that's happened. I've been to a lot of different haunted locations, to Sally's house outside Atchison, the same way, where my car just boo, like the alternator is out or something. Like I have just no power at all. And I'm like, well, crap. And we're sitting there and we're seeing these lights. We're getting, as my husband would say, the spirit. Do you ever feel that cold breeze across your neck? That's a spirit.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? It was like, it's like anybody who's seen Pitch Black, it's like that moment when the guy crawls away from the little buggy that they've got lights around, and
Oh, and
he's
the
about to
lights go out.
die. The lights go out, and he like lights his lighter, And he goes, "Oh, I should have died in France." And then all of a sudden, like the lighter illuminates all those monsters in the dark, and then his lighter goes out, and you know he's being eaten. It's
Right.
like that. It's like you can't see them, but you can feel them. You know they're all around you. It was so scary. And
It's fun.
that's what it reminds me of.
I like that we're laughing about it now, but it really was. We didn't get out and investigate that location. We just said, "You know what? I think we'll come back another time." And we'll come back in the daytime, even maybe. And it was just a family plot out in the middle of nowhere, absolutely middle of nowhere. But it was one of those locations where just the combination of hearing and seeing and feeling things that made you so absolutely uncomfortable for no reason whatsoever, that it became very scary. It became very, very scary. People always ask me what my scariest experience was, and I have a gaggle of them. One of them I talk about in my book as well, which was probably the only experience that I would associate with a demonic entity. And the chapter is called In My Grandpa's Skin. And so I won't give anybody any details of that. I'll force you to buy the book and tell me what you think. Because for me it was intimate. And that's what makes it scary. I think for those of us, it's not always going to the Waverly Hills Sanitarium. It's not always going to these big, fancy, Oddfellows Winery type places. Usually it's something much more personal. It's something in your house. It's something in your bed. It's something that's waking your children up. It's something that happens in the daytime. For those reasons, my top scary things are usually for an intimate reason. But we have another question here, and this is from Charlie W. out of Kansas, and he is asking me, what is your favorite tool for divination? For someone who's starting out in divination, what tool would you recommend, and what's your favorite tool?
Oh, well, that's two different questions for me. My favorite and what I would recommend for a beginner are two different things. I think tarot cards are a really good beginning tool because they already have a set pattern that you can read from. They already have a way of laying out the cards that mean something. And once you get into more advanced reading, like for me, I don't even use the layout at all. I just throw the cards and they mean what they mean when I'm throwing them. But if they do,
When you
but
say
when you
that, I think
first,
of Popeye. I am what I am is what I am.
yes,
Anyway,
that's right. But when you buy a set of tarot cards, they come with a little guide and they come with a little, this is how you lay out the card. And when you put the first one out, this represents the person you're reading for, and the second one represents their immediate influence, and the third one represents their past, and the fourth one represents their future, blah, 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 blah. So it gives you a formula to start with to get comfortable with that medium. And I think that's a good beginner's tool, but really, honestly, my favorite tool are my runes. I love my runes because they're multifaceted. Each rune has 16 or 17 different meanings. And so I can draw the exact same runes for two different people and have completely different readings. And
now,
I love
Charlie, if
that.
you're listening, hopefully our stepmother isn't, she recently asked me, runes? You and your sister are always talking about your runes and your runes online and making your runes and your what's a rune? What's a rune?
You do that voice pretty well. Well, for me, a rune can be made out of anything. It can be made out of wood or stone or clay or plastic or whatever. Basically, it's usually a small pebble-sized object that has a symbol etched on it. And usually the symbol's only etched on one side so that whenever they're upside down, or whenever they're in a bag or something like that, you don't necessarily see the symbols. So you're drawing them out or you're casting them onto a table, which is throwing, by the way, onto the table. You won't necessarily see what symbols you're throwing until they come up or until they flip over, what have you. And in the family of runes, we have everything from, like what you're saying, from Nordic runes, which that's a very, very old tradition. Druids were said to use runes, but also there's a whole set of pagan runes. You can get Wiccan symbols on them. You can get, gypsy symbols on them. You can have whatever symbols you want. You can make your own symbols. if you want. You can have an alphabet on there. You can have numbers on them. It doesn't really matter. As long as each of the symbols or each of the characters means something particular to you. And they even make already pre-made rune sets. You can buy it at bookstores. You can buy it at occult shops. Anything that sells, you know, any kind of divination tools will usually have rune sets already made. So if you don't want to take the time to make your own set and you just want to try one out, go find one that fits what you're looking for. You know, Native American animal totem runes, you know, with animals on the bottom or something like that. Whatever you're comfortable with. Mine are Egyptian-based, and I've just found that I'm extremely comfortable in that medium, and so they work best for me. But I could easily make a set of runes with my own symbols on them and be just happy as a lark with that, too. But I like runes, like I said, because mine, each symbol represents a number, a place, a type of person, an emotion, an environment, a color, a gender, a state of mind, all these different things. So whatever the universe is trying to tell me is what will come through for that particular rune for that particular person. And so it's a little bit more complicated than most of your typical rune sets, but I've gotten to where I'm really comfortable with it, and it's my favorite tool.
Well, and I totally did a fail there in the chat room because I was trying to post a picture of my runes that I use, which are, and there's just a link because I don't know how to post pictures. But my bone runes and the custom runes that I make for others, sometimes someone will want a custom rune. I recently had one that was really fun. They wanted a music set. So I did like the treble clef and the bass clef and sharps and flats and different notes and different beats and different, you know, forte and different different musical symbols that they would look at that and you would see. So like maybe you see the forte sign, you say, well, this is a really strong presence. This is a really strong presence. And it's, you know, associated with the treble clef. And maybe they thought the treble clef was a female. You know, and so this is a really strong female presence. And so the interpretation can be based on whatever the symbols are on the runes or items. You can kind of synonymously use those words together. And for my bone runes, it's really fun. I usually do, for my sets, there are 13 bones is in one set. And so I've got 1 through 12, and those are the numbers. They can be hours of the day. They can be months of the year. So you can associate months with birthdays or people that you know or zodiac signs, characteristics of the people you might know who are born in January for the number one. Or it could be, I really love doing 13 for being kind of the wild card or the astrological wild, if you will. It can be up for just psychic interpretation. But, you know, numbers, people looking for numbers or, you know, how many months should I wait or when am I going to meet my love life? You know, when's it going to change? And I cast out my bones and I, you know, will have a bone come up that's got the masculine symbol and it's got the number 7 on it. And it's like, well, that could be 7 minutes, 7 days, 7 months, 7 years. And so in your head, you kind of just go to, for our question, Eric, what is coming to you, what intuitively you trust, and what you feel is accurate. But there's all sorts of really cool things. And I would have to agree with you. I love my bone runes. I just love them. And it's a really cool divination tool. But we have had a workshop on divination in the past where you and I have challenged ourselves. And for those of you listening, please take this challenge. If you're listening and you are not courageous or maybe you're scared, all through the month of October, in reference to our being at the PRS Psychic Fair, Kat and I are running a psychic special where it's called Three Times a Charm. So that's three questions, or it can be one question and you get three divination tools. Like for me, I'm doing Kanzari cards, bone runes, and tarot. But think of three times a charm, right? And it's only $40. So if you're interested in psychic readings, if you're interested in divination, if you want to try out tarot, or you want to try out challenging us, coffee grounds, tea leaves, if you really want to do, oh, I'm going to think of it. Well, scrying, we can do scrying. Kat, she specializes in Egyptian divination, so even makeup, the way they use their makeup, or lunar phases, or candles, or bones, or oris piscina, placentas, and entrails. Please don't challenge us to go kill an animal and do divination, but it's worth a little more than $40, I would think. But maybe you're interested in aromancy, divination by the weather. Or maybe you've in the past done anthomancy, she loves me, she loves me not, divination with flowers. Or you believe in love at first sight, anthroposcopy. That's divination by first sight or first seeing. Challenge us, colormancy, biorhythmic, dendromancy, the study of trees, face reading, phrenology, channeling, interpreting. We will take your challenge for the third time's a charm divination special that we are running for the month of October. Now, we're here to the last 15 minutes of the show, and I've got two questions left. So for those of you who are interested in either a reading or a question about divination and psychic work, please feel free to join us live in the chat room at Intrepid Radio. Ooh, I'm getting feedback. Do you hear that? Or is it just me?
What are you hearing?
I'm hearing stuff in my ears. I'm hearing, ooh, that was weird. I'm hearing, please don't judge me, people. I'm hearing voices. I'm hearing voices talking to me. That was really strange. Or if you're just interested in connecting with a loved one, or you're just wanting to touch your toe in the psychic waters, per se, feel free. So let me touch base on another one of these questions. This is from Katrina in Tennessee. She says, what does auras have to do with psychic readings? How come some people can see auras, but they're not necessarily psychic? That's a good question.
I think that's an oxymoronical statement.
Ooh. Take that, Katrina!
I just had a discussion with somebody the other day about this. If somebody can see auras or they can see energies around people, even if that's the only ability they have, I still consider that a psychic ability. I still consider that exercising our psychic muscle.
Exercising the demons.
That's right. So I think that that is definitely a psychic ability. It's opening your mind up and being able to see a different spectrum of the universe, a different spectrum of our plane. Some people can see electricity or EM, you know, radiation. Some people can see UV light in different ways than other people. And I'm not talking about just people that have those extra cones in their eyes that can see beyond the spectrum. I'm talking about they can actually see fluctuations in the air and movements of gravity and things like that. That's a psychic ability, just because it may not be predicting the future or, you know, seeing ghosts or connecting with spirit guides. It does not mean that that's not a psychic ability. It's very useful. I mean, heck, you just have to apply it just like anything else. But I think that absolutely that's a psychic ability. It's just exercising a different psychic muscle, so to speak, than somebody who channels spirits or somebody who reads objects or somebody who is more of a medium or things like that. It's just different. It's just different. That's all. And I absolutely think that's a psychic phenomenon going on there.
Well, and I always kind of, I don't want to say get frustrated, but I feel sadness. I feel sadness for people who are obviously reaching out to explore the concept of being psychic, because, you know, you kind of feel like maybe it's a special power, you know, or like you're a hero that you've got this this additional gift. But really, I always tell people that we're all psychic. We're all born with the ability to be psychic. It's a lot like I use the analogy of musical ability. Some people are born with the ability to just pick up a guitar and play it. You know, you see these two-year-olds on YouTube, or, you know, my kids, they can play the guitar better than I can, and I've been trying to learn it for a decade. And some people just get it, where others have to practice. And practice sucks. And whatever it is, whether it's soccer or piano or psychic work, practice is never fun. But if it's something that you want to know how to do and you want to learn how to do it well, it is a process. So we're all psychic. It's just How psychic are we without having to apply ourselves? And some people are born with that ability being, much, much stronger than others. And it's kind of fun because I think of you, Kat. You've got psychic powers that, for example, recently I was doing readings for a group of young ladies, and one of the ladies, she was listening to everyone's reading. Everyone's reading was going really well, and she was really excited. And she sat down in front of me, and I kind of told her a few things, and we're having this conversation. And I said, "Well, do you have any questions for me, or how do you feel about the reading?" And she said, "Well, there was only one thing that I wanted you to hit on, and you didn't hit on it. So I don't know. I guess that's whatever." And I felt like, oh man, like that hurt my feelings. I was like, "Well, what is it? What is it that you really wanted me to hit on?" She said, "My cat. I recently lost my cat, and I really wanted him to come through." And had you been the psychic for her, that would have absolutely come through because you have the ability to touch base with animal spirits, totem animals, loved ones, animal fur babies that have crossed over the rainbow bridge, whatever you want to call it, and they just come to you. And I feel like I've got like a little psychic image of myself in my head, like, "Come on, Lassie," like doing this, because I really want to get that information, but I just don't. I just don't get it. And so you've worked with animals your whole life. You're a veterinary technician. You've been able to use that gift to your abilities. What is an ability, Kat, that you wish was stronger or that you have to practice on?
Visualization. Things like remote viewing, or when somebody, like recently, I had a person come to me for a reading and they wanted to know where something was located in their house. And of course, you have to visualize the house in order to give them a spot to look. That's something I wish was stronger for me. That's something I've only developed in the last few years. And it was only since I had some spiritual guidance that that even came through at all. I had one of my tools charged with a message for me, and that message was how to help with my visualizations. And ever since then, I've been better at it. But before that, I couldn't get visions at all. I completely had to fabricate them from what I was feeling. And so I couldn't tell you what colors things were or anything like that because I didn't know. I could only tell you what it felt like. And so I had to describe things based on that. And I got really good at it, just like a blind person can get really good at telling you what their neighborhood's like or what their house looks like because they know where all the furniture is and that kind of thing. But it's different when you finally are able to see things. And I was able to give this person the location in their house, and I was able to tell them colors and what it looked like. But I'm still in a position where even whenever I visualize things, I'm standing in that spot. And I have a hard time rotating that camera in my mind to look around. Usually I will get one viewpoint and that's it. Or if I'm reading for a person, I get the direction they were looking and that's it. I can't make them turn around. I can't look behind them. I only see what they saw.
It's like
So
Mr. Potato
sometimes.
Head in the Toy Story, where you've got the little eye and you're only seeing,
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, exactly. And that's definitely something I wish was stronger with me. But I work on it all the time. It's like any other muscle. You have to exercise it, or it will never get any better, and it will never get stronger. So I work on it every chance I get.
Well, and for those of you listening, if you are interested in working on your psychic abilities, my sister and I, she helps me quite a bit with a program that I run called the Psychic Research Program for Students, Psychic Student Research Program. And it's a 12-phase program with volunteers. You don't have to be psychic to start or to finish, but it's all about learning to exercise those muscles. And we cover everything from auras to remote viewing. We talk about MK Ultra and some of the government workshops for remote viewing and the fact that remote viewing is a thing. And it's really cool. And I love it that you say that, you have to practice on it because you absolutely do. So anyway, we are down to the last few minutes here, so I want to plug the PRS fair again. For those of you who are interested, you can go to PRS.org, or if you're anywhere in the Midwest, feel free to drive down right on 35 Highway to the Fairfax District, right there off of the river in Kansas City, Missouri. It's October 16th, 17th, and 18th. And I believe it's only $8 for 3 days. Is that right, Kat?
It's $9 with the coupon.
Oh, okay. So we have a coupon for you, and we're putting it online on Facebook and Twitter. That's backslash the Paranormal Sarah, and you'll see a link to Kat Wilder, the Philinist, as well as her band, the Atomic Cats in Kansas City. If you're interested in 80s cover bands and fun rock, you can go check them out at a venue near you. But we're going to be at the Psychic Fair, 16th, 17th, and 18th, just a few weeks away, guys. Be sure and join us there. All of your metaphysical needs will be met. And of course, we'd love to see you in person and do a reading for you. But if you're unable to come, like I said, I have to say this again. We are doing the Three Times a Charm special during the month of October. If you're interested in a reading from either Kat or myself or both of us, we can do a tandem reading for you. It's only $40, and you can send over 3 questions or send over 1 question or just a general anything and say, hey, give me what you get. And we'll compile a cool divination reading for you. Or if you want to challenge us, say, give us a picture of your coffee grounds at the bottom of your cup or the leaves on your porch, anything that happens to catch your eye. We don't subscribe to coincidence, folks. Take a picture, send us a $40 via PayPal, and we will do our divination special for you in honor of the PRS fair this month. So, Kat, where can people find you if they need to say, hey, I got to touch base with Kat Wilder? I got to know more. I got to know more about Egyptian runes. I got to know more about the Atomic Cats. I got to know more. Where do they go?
Okay. Well, you can email me at thephilinist@yahoo.com. That's THE as in the FELINIST at yahoo.com, or thephilinist.webs.com is my website. Or you can call my number at 816-944-0735, and that will get you to my answering service, or I might even be there to talk to you in person. You never know. So,
Ooh, you never know.
but those 3 ways are the most convenient, and of course, they're available 24/7, so anytime.
So utilize it. All right, guys. Well, we're heading out. For those of you interested in Haunted by the Abyss, check it out on Amazon.com, or you can visit sarahsoderlund.com, the website, or any of my social networking sites. For those of you who sent in your questions, we really appreciate it. Hopefully, we got those answered. And for that remaining question we didn't get to, I will send you a private message and see if we can't touch base with you there, or maybe address it next week. Here on the show, Mysteries of the Mind, with your host, Sarah Soderlund, guest today, Kat Wilder. Until then, guys.